Before we start this episode of Conversations with Kenyatta, I'm excited to tell you about my new partnership with Audible. Listeners can go to www.audibletrial.com/Kenyatta to receive a free 30-day trial. Audible is a wonderful resource with audiobooks for every reader. It even has titles from authors that have been on my podcast, such as Dr. Dan Bouck's Democracy's Data and Gail Lukasik's White Like Her. And please note that this is an affiliate link, so I may receive a commission with no cost to you, just a free trial with so many wonderful titles. And I love to read. But with that, here's this week's episode of Conversations with Kenyatta. Welcome to episode 13 of Conversations with Kenyatta. I'm delighted today to have Betsy J. Green. She's a former staff editor at World Book Encyclopedia and associate editor of Reader's Digest. She's a noted house historian who's been writing and researching about house history for over 20 years. And she has also written nominations to list buildings on the National Register of Historic Places. So Betsy, tell the audience a little bit about yourself. Sort of, where did you start your career? What did you do when you first kind of launched into being a professional?
I worked for Reader's Digest and World Book Encyclopedia. And at both of those publications, I had done some research.
When you did the research, did you find yourself kind of drawn to that type of work, drawn to research, or was that a big interest for you?
I've always been very curious. So I think learning things and learning about new things is something that appeals to me.
Yeah, I'm a curious person as well. So I can definitely relate to that. So using that curiosity, how did you get into researching the history of homes, of houses?
Well, I kind of backed into it. I got started when I moved into an older home in the Chicago area, early 1990s. I got curious about the history of the house and started to do some research. It took a long time because I didn't know where to go, what questions to ask, or what to expect that I might find. So I started by going to the local historical society, which a lot of people do. I gave them my address and asked if they had any information about my house. And one of the volunteers looked in a filing cabinet and came back and said, "Sorry, we don't have anything on that address." So then I started doing research in the old deeds on file at the county courthouse. It was hard work because I was totally unfamiliar with deeds. But finally, I figured out who had owned the property through the years. And deeds are not easy to figure out, but there is a lot of information that can be gleaned from them. So then I went back to the Historical Society with a list of names of owners and was basically asking better questions. And I did find that they had some files on some of the homeowners. And I found a photo of the man who built the house in 1908 and a photo of the house in 1913 in the file of the second family that owned the home. And that's the pot of gold for people who own older homes, is old photos of the home. And the best sources are families who used to live in the home. Sometimes you can find photos in files, and sometimes by contacting former owners or their descendants. Unfortunately, there is no guarantee.
Well, in that, I love that story because you mentioned things for genealogists, which are very important. One, well, we always spend time at the courthouse because that's where all the records yes. for our research. But you mentioned deeds, and you're right, they're not that easy to follow, especially when you're trying to figure out land records and where the property is located and things like that. But also going to the Historical Society, right? You went there and they didn't have any information on that address, but you didn't let that deter you. You still, you were persistent and used that curiosity to continue to do the research. So I really think that's really cool because now, and finding photos, as you said, is very interesting and also a great treasure in sort of this hunt and this mystery to uncover the history of your old home. So I want to get to one of the things that I use all the time in doing research, right? So when we talk about historic homes, there are a lot of places that are on the National Register of Historic Places. And you have written nominations to list buildings for that. So how did you even get involved with those projects?
I don't really remember how I got started with the nominations to the National Register. I guess it came from me spending time doing research in archives and libraries and running into people who needed someone to do the nomination. That's quite an extensive job to do the nomination. It's a lot harder than just researching who lived in your house.
Let's dive into that a little bit so that the audience can really understand. It's more intense research and a lot harder. What goes into sort of that nomination in those applications? I mean, I've seen the PDFs of them, right? Once they're approved, I've looked through them to learn more about the place that I'm researching, mostly Southern places. But what do you have to do to actually make it to that point where you're granted or you're part of that register?
Well, there are several qualifications for listing on the National Register. One is that the house or building is one of the best representatives of that style in that community. And so that might be something that you could go from. Part of it might be who lived in that house, who was famous, who lived in that house. Another one is what might have happened in that house. Was the Gettysburg Address filmed in that house? Or was somebody's nomination to presidency occur in that house? So that's part of what you have to prove in order to be on the National Register. And then there's a lot of documentation. I remember I did a courthouse once, and a courthouse and other houses. I had to go in and measure every single room and also list in the room what was original, like the windows, for example, and what was not original. So it was a huge amount of documentation. And then you need to take all your research and go before a committee and answer their questions. And I remember one time standing there for like 20 minutes, shaking in my boots while the people on the committee discussed, well, how important was it to have original windows in a building in general? And meanwhile, I'm sweating up there and waiting for the answer.
That does sound very intense. Definitely. And especially with the courthouse having to measure and kind of understand the original architecture, is a lot. And I never thought about it in that way, right? As a person who's viewed it, on the other end, once it's completed, right? I'm happy to have the documentation, but I didn't understand the process behind it. So thank you for explaining that. But I want to get into your teaching. So you taught house history in the Chicago area. So where did you teach? Who were your students when you were doing that?
I taught classes in a couple of adult ed programs for people who wanted to research the history of their homes or homes that had belonged to their parents or grandparents. At that time, the only house history research books available were for people who owned homes built centuries ago and weren't not very useful or encouraging for people who wanted to research a home, say, built in the 1920s.
Okay, interesting. So it was adult learners. And I think you bring up an excellent point regarding the older homes, right? That there were homes that were built in the 1920s. When I think of house history and I think of researching old homes, and because of my research, I do a lot of Southern research, a lot of research within plantations, right? So we typically, or at least I do, typically don't think, when I think of a house history in an old home, I don't think of the 1920s, right? I think of something so much older. But I appreciate that you were teaching folks how to do that, and especially in the Chicagoland area. I'm from Detroit, so shout out to the Midwest. But after teaching, you wrote a book, Discovering the History of Houses in Your Neighborhood. Maybe it was before or while you were teaching, but I know it was published in 2002. So what made you decide to write your book?
Well, I wrote the book so that the information I was giving to people in the Chicago area would be available to people all over the U.S., because I think there's a lot of interest in older homes all over the place, in homes of various vintages.
That's very true, because after I purchased your book, I reached out to you that I got your book on that following Monday when I came back from Santa Barbara. I was reading it as I was walking to Starbucks, and I had it in the elevator. And one of my neighbors said to me, oh, are you, doing something new? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm interested in learning more about the history of houses. And then this other woman in the elevator, who I didn't even know, she's like, that's so cool. And it was just funny to me that something you would think that people may not be interested in, two random, kind of strangers kind of said, oh, that's pretty cool. And I'm sure that, you know, I could see their curiosity was piqued by that.
I think that's the kind of history that just about everybody can relate to, because just about everyone has lived in a house at some point. So much of history is, you know, history of wars, history of politics, but everybody can relate to a house, to the kitchens. You know, why is that funny window there? And whoever thought of that, and whoever thought that was attractive, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right. It's a great equalizer, right? And I think the stories you uncover, as you talked about with the nominations, did some, you know, famous event or some quote unquote famous person live in this house, and the architecture and the structure and all of that stuff. Yeah, I feel like you want to know who walked the halls before you, right? I mean, and I'm sure sometimes you may find out sometimes you find out things that are not that pleasant, but that's the same thing that happens in genealogy. But just knowing the history of the place you call home, I think is important. But in getting into genealogy, you said in your book, take a genealogist to lunch, which I like that part of it. So have you partnered in your research and the work that you've done over this, you know, since started teaching and beyond, have you partnered with genealogists for your projects that, whether it's for the National Register or for just things you've done for private clients or anything like that?
No, I basically did the research myself. Well, a lot of the research for house histories is related to the history of the families who lived in the home. So basically, you start by figuring out who owned or rented the home in the past, and then do genealogy research on those families. A lot of the history of a home is related to the families who have lived there. So it's very similar to genealogy research. And people often have information that is not found in archives. Do you have time for a few war stories?
Of course.
Absolutely. Of course. Okay, I once researched a 1905 house in the Chicago area, and I managed to find the grandson of the family who built the house. So he sent me a photo of his grandparents when they got married, and that was really nice. And then he asked me, do the current owners know that the house was razed? And I said, you mean R-A-Z-E-D, knocked down? And he said, no, raised up. He explained that the house was originally built as a 1.5-story house. And when his grandparents wanted more room, they had the house raised up and they built a new first floor and lowered the house back down. So the current owners were amazed to find that their first floor was not as old as their second floor.
Wow.
Another time I was researching a house that had a woman's name scratched in the kitchen window glass. And the current owners really wanted me to find out the story behind that. So I did a bunch of research on the families who lived in the home, and that name did not appear. Then when I was in the local archives researching the house, the phone rang and the volunteer answered the phone and turned to me and said, you might want to talk to this lady. Her husband grew up in that house. Well, of course. So I asked her about the name in the window and she knew exactly what had happened. She said that the maid in the house had gotten engaged and received an engagement ring, but the kids in the family were kidding her that it was not a real diamond. So to prove to the kids that it was real, she took off her ring and wrote her name in the kitchen window. And that's why the name did not appear in the names of the families who owned the house. So it pays to talk to people.
Yes, it does. Yes, I love stories like that because storytelling is so powerful. And just you telling that story, I will probably relate that to someone because that's amazing that she actually took her ring off to prove it to the children and that the phone rang and you talked to this person who knew that story. And it shows how important it is to find people who are connected to the property, connected to the community you're researching, but also that a lot of the history is not written and oral history is very important. So I love stories like that. That's so fun. I mean, that's why we do what we do, right? It's sort of a mystery.
Yes, that's the fun part. Yes,
that is the fun part. So that's great. So let's get to your column that you started to write. And it's the Great House Detective and the Santa Barbara Independent, which is kind of how I came across your name originally when I was there celebrating my birthday. So what made you decide to start writing this column? I think it's fantastic, but I want to know sort of what was the inspiration for it.
Well, I used to write a similar column when I lived in the Chicago area. And when I was in Santa Barbara and stopped writing my series of books about the history of Santa Barbara about a year and a half ago, I contacted the Independent to see if they would be interested in having me write a house history column for Santa Barbara. And that has been very interesting. The last column that I wrote, and maybe the one that you saw, was about a house where the current owners had discovered an old postcard in the wall when they were having some work done on the house. So you never know where history will pop up. So if you're having someone do work on your house, you might mention to them that if they see an old postcard or perhaps a signature written on a wall, don't cover it back up again. You know, let you know, and so you can get a chance to document it.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of times, you know, this is the frustration we have, I think, as people that are curious, people interested in history. A lot of times when people are renovating or they're doing other things, they tend to kind of discard things that are old, right? Like the postcard, as you mentioned, or maybe photographs. It's a good kind of point to say, save this stuff, or at least tell the contractors or whoever you're working with to not throw it out, because you never know where it would lead you.
I knew some people who took down the wallpaper in an old house and found a signature. Now, sometimes plasterers would sign their work. So they took down the wallpaper, they saw the signature, and they couldn't bear to cover it up again. And so they got a picture frame and put it on top of the signature. And then they painted around the picture frame so that they could always see the signature on the wall there. And I mentioned that I had been researching the history of my older home. And my daughter, who was about 10 years old at the time, I didn't think she was listening, but she certainly was. And we had an old carriage house in the backyard, a two-story carriage house that I guess had horses in the bottom and hay up at the top. So my daughter decided to go fishing in the walls. So she went upstairs and made like a hook and a piece of string and fished down in between the joists in the garage. And one of the things that she pulled up was a scrap of an old newspaper from Chicago, dated 1906. Now, I mentioned the house was built in 1908. It was in 1906, and it was a Swedish language Chicago paper. And I had known from my research that the man who built the house was named Charles Gustafsson, and he was a Swedish-American carpenter. And I've also learned in my research that sometimes builders or window installers will take a copy of the day's newspaper and put it in the walls to somehow date their work. So again, that's something else to look for when you're having your house worked on.
Wow, that is fascinating that your daughter did that. Fishing, as you said. But just to, I would have never thought about that. I mean, we use newspapers a lot in our research as genealogists, but putting newspapers while they're building the house, I would have just, that is so fascinating because it gives you, it's like a time capsule, right? Mm-hmm. It gives you information on what was going on in 1906, even though the house was completed in 1908. I have to ask you this because you've told just in this brief time a lot of fascinating stories, but what are, or do you have one that's like your favorite story or your favorite project that you've worked on that you haven't already shared? Because I feel like with the amount of time you've been doing this and all of your experience that you have a ton of projects. So is there anything that, you know, stands out?
Yes, I was researching the history of a home in the Chicago area built in the 1890s. And one of the things that I did, and I mentioned, I always try to contact former owners of the home. So I managed to reach a woman who had owned the home in the 1960s. And she said to me, do the current owners know about the ghosts? And I said, well, if they do, they didn't say anything to me. What do you know? And this woman told me that she had, when she and her husband bought the house in the 1960s, it had been owned by a group of nuns who used it as their mother house. So the nuns had lived there. And she said the nuns told her family about the ghosts and that you saw the ghosts as you pulled into the driveway and drove past the house. You would see faces inside the house in the windows. And she said that she and her family saw this and lived with this, believe it or not, for about 6 months. And it was finally getting to creep her out. So she went to the third floor, which was sort of unfinished, where she felt the ghosts the most, and had a one-sided conversation with the ghosts and asked them if they would please move to the carriage house in the back of the property. It was a two-story carriage house back there. And she told me that she felt that the ghosts had done that and that they didn't see ghosts in the house anymore. So I told this story to the current owner, and she said, oh, no, we've never seen anything. Oh, you know, no problem. Well, about a year later, I ran into the current owner, and she said, they're back. And I said, oh, no. And she said they had, since her kids were used to doing their homework in what the real estate agent had called the morning room. And it was a large 1890s house. And there was a living room, this little morning room behind it, and then the kitchen in the back. And she had assumed, when the real estate agent said it was the morning room, that the sun came in there in the morning and it was a nice place to have coffee or something. But actually, the morning room is spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. And that's traditionally, before people used funeral homes, where they laid out the bodies when they had the funeral service. And that's what the morning room was all about. And she told me that her kids, and she hadn't told her kids about the ghosts, she said her kids normally did their homework in the morning room. And after a while, the kids started to say to her, Mom, when I'm in that room, I just have this feeling like somebody's watching me. So she felt that they were back, and she told me that she was planning to burn sage or white sage or something in the room to sort of get rid of the ghost. So hopefully that worked, but that was pretty unusual. I did run into another ghost.
Oh yeah, please tell that story. I love it.
Okay, another ghost. I was researching a house, a smaller house built in the Chicago suburbs in the 1890s. And I found that the first owner was a widow and that she had died in the home. But people normally died in the home in the old days. And so I before I wrote this up in the house history, I wanted to talk it over with the owner to see if she was okay with that. And so I went to her house and was talking about some of the things I'd found out about the house. And I said, by the way, the house was built by this woman and she did die in the home. And the homeowner sat up on the sofa. And I thought, oh, no. I shouldn't have said anything at all. Well, the owner sat up and she said, I have felt a presence, a female presence, not unfriendly. I have felt it. My cat has reacted. Now I know her name. Thank you. And I thought, phew, all right.
No, those are great. And I love that because you bring such a different type. Well, a different aspect, I should say, of storytelling, right? It is the family, the house, but also the presence of the people that live there. And we talk so much in doing genealogy about connecting with our ancestors, but this is really about connecting with the people that shared this home with you, right? We mention, you talk in your book about your neighborhood, right? Researching your neighborhood, but we have this thing in genealogy, it's known as the fan network or cluster genealogy, but it's friends, associates, and neighbors. And this kind of, to me, fits into that because if you're in this home, you're researching the people that lived there before you, right? And the families who built the home, who started it. So it's fascinating. And I love that because I love a good story. So, but you mentioned your series and it's called Way Back When. Focused on Santa Barbara, but tell the audience a little bit more about the series. You know, what it's about, how you decided to start that series, how many books are part of that series as well.
Well, the series is about 6 years long. I started with Way Back When, Santa Barbara in 1914, and that was back in 2014. So I was looking at the newspapers in Santa Barbara of 100 years ago. And then I continued for the years 1915 through 1919. I went through the local papers looking for interesting stories. Among other things, we had a movie studio here called the Flying A. And in the 19-teens, they went all over town, maybe with a bunch of cowboys on horseback, would just show up and start shooting at each other with fake guns and freak out the people on the street until they saw the cameraman grinding the camera in the background.
The series has, you said it's 6 years. The latest book, I believe, is 1919. Is that correct?
Yes. What happened was I relied on two newspapers that were here back then. And For some reason, in starting in the early 1920s, one of the two papers is missing. I presume that some bound copies of it were lost or destroyed during the big earthquake that we had here in Santa Barbara in 1925. But with only one paper, I didn't have enough material. And the papers here also had a lot of interesting stories. A lot of small town newspapers basically say, you know, who got married, who died, and I think that we're going to have a good crop of beans this year. But Santa Barbara newspapers, there was someone there who was writing stories about, you know, somebody's pet monkey got loose and went running down the street, scaring the neighbors.
Yeah, that's interesting with the newspapers and your research when you started in 2014. Were you going to the local library? Were you doing things online or a combination of both?
Well, at the time, the newspapers were on microfilm and not online yet. So I had to either go to the Historical Museum and look at papers on bound copies or go to the library and look at the microfilm machine. And this was, only a couple of years ago, but I know I had a number of young people come up to me while I was using the microfilm machine and say to me, "What is that machine?"
I know. So I remember using microfilm when I first started genealogy, and you know how it's just my right hand. It's like that shoulder would just from turning all the microfilm would be just sore at the end of a day of research. You mentioned something about an earthquake in 1925. At least I feel like living in California, we all hear about the San Francisco earthquake. But what happened in the earthquake in Santa Barbara?
Early in the morning, about 6:45, there was a big earthquake. They believe that it was, I think, 8-point-something. They didn't have the Richter scale back then. But basically what happened is a lot of the buildings along State Street, our main street, collapsed into the street. In general, the homes that were built were frame homes. The only problems they had were the chimneys. But the downtown was pretty much destroyed. And of course, as happens now, as in the past, telegrams went out saying, you know, Santa Barbara's wiped off the map, tsunami, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it wasn't quite that bad, but the city basically had to be rebuilt. Fortunately, there were already a group of urban reformers who had been pushing for a cohesive style, basically colonial revival style for Santa Barbara. And now that, you know, the city needed to be rebuilt again, they said, hey, let's go for it. And that's what gives Santa Barbara the look that it has today.
That's very interesting because when we were there, my friend and I driving around, it's just so different, you know, and thinking about living in Santa Monica, LA area, it felt more intimate and cozy, right? Because of that style. Like I think we were at the library and the courthouse, all of that, just the architecture is stunning. Were you interested in architecture before you started doing house history? Because I feel like part of this work is not only the genealogy piece of it, right? Where you look at the families or the researching the property, but it's also, especially with your work with the National Register, understanding the architectural styles. And I know you mentioned in your book, and I can't think of it right now, but there's a definitive guide basically on architecture that most people use when they're researching. So was this something you were interested in before or did it kind of happen as you researched the history of your own home?
No, it started as I started researching houses, and basically researching house architecture is called domestic architecture, which is somewhat similar, but somewhat different from researching architectural styles of buildings. One of the best books was written by a woman named Virginia McAllister, and it's called A Field Guide to American Houses. And that has a lot of pictures and a lot of drawings, and that's very useful to page through and figure out what style your house is. And that can also give you a little bit of information about when your house might have been built, because it will tell you what decades this particular style was popular. And that's another clue as to the age of your house and the history.
That's great. Yeah. And thank you for mentioning that, because I actually am going to probably pick it up now that I have very interested in this. What advice would you give to someone that's interested in researching the history of their homes? You talked a lot about your process and the hard work, but if, you know, they decided they want to research the history of their house or someone else's home, what advice would you give to them?
Well, you can start by looking at the paperwork that you have from the closing when you bought your house. You can go through that. You probably haven't looked at it since you bought the house, but look for names of previous owners. You might find an abstract of title giving a list of owners, and it might have other information that might be useful to you now that you're interested in your house. Another good source is the reverse indexes in old phone books and city directories. Nowadays, reverse indexes are separate volumes, but a lot of old phone books, the early 1900s up through about 1950 or even later, have in the back of the phone book a reverse index where street by street, house number by house number, it lists who was living there at that time. And then you can page to the front of the book, and a lot of old phone books gave a lot more information than we're used to now. Often it had the husband's occupation, where he worked, the wife's names, sometimes the children's names, and whether they owned or rented the home. So there's a lot of information right there. And then you can do basic genealogy research in local archives or online sites such as Ancestry.com or FamilySearch.org. Also, old maps, such as the Sanborn Fire Insurance maps, can also be very useful. And this you can find on the Library of Congress website. And then if there are a lot of places, and my book mentions other places as well. But it also, you were talking about, my book is called Discovering the History of Your House and Your Neighborhood. It pays to network. Tell everyone in your neighborhood that you're researching the history of your house. They might have an old photo of their house with your house in the background and might not realize that you might be interested in it.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you mentioned, of course, the two sites that I use the most, Ancestry.com and FamilySearch.org. I love maps. So the Sanborn maps, I'm very familiar with the Library of Congress. So for folks that are doing the research, one, you have your column that you write. I'm always very interested in getting people to kind of get the story out there, right? So you're researching the history of your home, but it's great for you, but how do you preserve that history or share that history? So if, you know, folks don't have columns, what ways can they kind of share what they discover about their home with others, maybe in the neighborhood, in the county, in the state?
Well, one thing you can do, if you're on any kind of social media, you might start posting information about the research that you found, maybe as you go along, and ask if anybody has any clues as to where, if they know about a certain person. And I always encourage people when they're done with their research to donate a copy to the local historical society or museum or library so that other people can benefit. You can't be sure that the person who buys your house will care about the history of your house and perhaps, you know, throw it out or whatever. And you would like future owners to be able to benefit from your research.
That's great. That's great. I love that donating to the local historical society, because that's a place where they, you know, people will go research and they can actually benefit from sort of what you've done. So with the books you've done with the Way Back When series in Santa Barbara, as well as discovering the history of your house and your neighborhood, where can folks purchase your books? On your website, other places?
Right. You can go to my website for some of the links to purchase them. You can also go, my books are all on Amazon.com. And my column is also available online if people search for Great House Detective. And by the way, when you do that, you might end up with a site for the Great Mouse Detective, but that is not me. That is something else.
That's funny.
I also do Zoom talks about house history research. I did one recently for a genealogy group in Oregon. So people can get in touch with me through my website, which is BetsyJGreen.com. And my final words of advice are, be patient, be polite, but as you mentioned, be persistent.
That is so true. It takes a lot of work. I think persistence, curiosity, patience, all of that is important. And those things are important in genealogy as well as in doing house history. And I think these are a perfect combination of the two, because we always look at property. We always look at maps. We always look at land records. So I really feel like, for me at least, reading your book and actually kind of your column inspired me to get back to it. I did it once for a friend of mine when she had an old home in DC when I lived in Virginia. but I haven't done it in like 15 or more years. But now I'm interested and inspired to do it. So I thank you so much for sharing your stories, your words of wisdom with us today.
Thank you for inviting me to speak about my favorite subject.
You're welcome.
Conversations with Kenyatta is produced by Kenyatta D. Berry and Caitlin Owl and features Kenyatta D. Berry. The music for this episode was Good Vibe by Ketza. Follow Kenyatta on Instagram under the handle kenyatta.berry, on Facebook at facebook.com/kenyattadb, and on Twitter at kenyattadb. You can also find more information on her book and upcoming events on her website at kenyattaberry.com.